This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 855, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you, and that one listener in Altadena. Fanboy Pick of the Week, episode 855. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with my co-host, Josh Flanagan.
Are you speaking mellifluously on purpose?
It's early, and it's cold.
Okay. So that's your early cold voice?
Yeah, so I'm trying to breathe not through my nose.
Yes.
Because I'm stuffy from the cold.
Fair.
And I, you know, we talk about this all the time. Since I'm doing the show early, the way my voice sounds at the beginning of the show is different than the way it sounds at the end because I haven't usually been talking before the show started, so I haven't really warmed up. I sound like Grim Death in the beginning, and by the end I sound more human.
Hey, I said mellifluous. That's a nice thing to say.
That's true. I'm not saying. Yes. Let's fight.
Hey, let's not be defensive, pal.
Hey, this is the show. Can you tell we're almost towards the end of the year and we're getting close to the break? My name is Connor Kilpatrick. We already did that part. Wow. We are a fanboy also, and we like to read comics. We pick the favorite one we read in the week, call it the pick of the week. We'll talk about that book, other books from the week. We'll do some listener mail, hopefully, and patron picks and all kinds of fun things. It's a fun time. It's a happy, fun hour of comics, and that's what we do here every week. And Josh had the pick this week because there's spoilers and exercise your caution. Josh, you had the pick.
Fantastic Four.
One of those
number
shows.
One or number 694. I think we all know what it is, but we have to do the dance to a certain extent. This, unlike the last issue, two issues of the last run, this is the actual start of a new volume. We don't need to rehash that.
Yeah, this is the first pick of the week for Fantastic Four this year.
Really?
Yeah, I was shocked. It was picked a bunch of times the previous year,
right?
But this was the first time this year.
All right, so I had no idea what to expect. In fact, I think I was preparing myself for it to be like the two issues at the end of the last volume, and I was like, oh, this is going to be rough. And I don't know Ryan North. I know
he's a multiple Eisner Award winner.
Yeah, I know he did Squirrel Girl and is well thought of, but I just don't have any experience with it for whatever reason.
Yep, same.
Iban Coelho on art, Jesus Abortoy. That can't be Abortoy. Right. Abortov, right. Sorry, there you go. Abortov. And Joe Caravagna on letters. And I was really surprised when this issue started because it's a road trip issue with Thing and Alicia, and everybody else is gone doing something. And it's a Twilight Zone episode. They end up in this town that is the same day over and over again. It's July 12th, 1947.
It's Groundhog Day.
And I thought, that's really weird for a start of a whole new volume and run.
I had the exact same thought. I was reading this and I thought, wow, like this is a bold choice to start.
Yeah.
You know, look, you've got a giant number one on the cover. I don't know if that attracts people at all. It must if they keep doing it. And if you're not a Fantastic Four reader, it's just not what you expect when you open it. I was surprised that you made this pick. I didn't think it was a bad comic at all. I thought it was a very good comic. But I was surprised just in general. And I was also sort of flabbergasted by the choice.
I thought so too. But then a lot of things happened. One, I really found myself taken in by the story.
I
liked that it didn't turn into a demon shows up. It was a whole other thing where they had to learn to they decided because they're heroes that they need to fix the problem and help these people, which is you know, bang on. They by doing so, there was clobbering time. Clobbering time didn't work. They had to be humans and relate to people, and that's how they solved the problem. But then the other bit, there's two other issues in this one issue. Two other things that happened. So the first three pages caused me to think that there was an error.
Right. Well, we're reading digitally, and you know, I don't know if they've repeated the page. Like, it's the same page twice. And the third page has a slight variation to it. But I was like, wait a minute, what? Did I just screw up here?
So right away, again, with the bold choice of the thing, that is a bold choice to start your story on. And it actually works better digitally because you know, wait, what's happening? And that is, I thought, oh, you're playing with the form right away.
Do you think Iván Coelho got the same page rate for just copying and pasting the files?
I think so. I think he should have. I would have been pissed off because it's anyway. But it's a form joke, and it's a thing that doesn't happen because when we're down to 20 pages, the space is very precious. But they decided to go with it anyway. And I will say, I didn't feel like I got shorted pages when I read this issue. So no, I think it's a very dense comic.
Yeah.
And so that there's this going on. Then as we get into the Groundhog Day portion of everything, there were just some choices with the form. They did a thing where the panels run over the pages as if you're just seeing, if it was a really tall page and you just took a cross section of the whole thing.
Right.
A couple of times.
Or like it's a film strip going by and you're just seeing part of it. Yeah. I really like this. This is the kind of horror, if you want to call it horror, that I like, where it's more like Twilight Zone-y. And I thought that was a fun conceit. I thought the thing and Alicia were great. I liked all of it. It was a little like, beyond the fact that this isn't a number one volume issue and it doesn't feature three quarters of the team, it seems like it's the same story conceit as Spider-Man. In that Reed and Johnny did something horrible and everybody hates them now. And we don't know what it is. And it's like, wait, we're doing that in
That's
Spider-Man.
Fair.
So I was like, well, that's why would they do that in another Marvel book? That was a minor thing because I think you don't find that till the last two pages.
Well, and that was the last thing. That didn't occur to me, but you're not wrong about it. So they get through this problem and they're driving away and they're like, well, that's settled. And because I thought the issue was over.
Mm-hmm.
And you flip it and then they're driving and talking and then you get basically that information you just gave and a shot of a giant smoking hole in Manhattan.
Right.
And I was like, okay. Now I understand how it's a first choice. It really leads you into what the run is without having it come instead of starting on. I just think that. So my things are this: the story was great, the characterization, those things, the playing with the form.
Yes,
it's really fun. I mean, like you just don't see a lot of it, and then using this as an interesting way to start off what is the big superhero story, I thought was also a really good structure. I thought, okay, that's like a weird little one-shot, but really what it is it leads into giant smoking hole in the ground and Reed and Johnny fuck some shit up. I'm in.
You would think a giant smoking hole in the ground would affect Manhattan real estate prices, but it wouldn't.
It wouldn't. It would actually, like, hole side would go up.
Yeah, you'd be like, well, you got a great view of the hole. So you've got a whole view, and that's going to raise your prices. There's park view side, there's hole view side, and actually hole view side more expensive.
Yeah, well, hole if you can get hole and park, like you know, like
then you're
north
gold.
Side faces park, east side faces hole.
Yeah, in fact, those buildings on the south side, they've got a view of the park and the hole, so that's real. You're talking real cash value for your property.
Sure.
There.
Also notice, by the way, if we're talking about the hole, notice that traffic coming in and out of the hole is unaffected.
Well, yeah, because
there's traffic coming directly south of the hole.
There's so much angry honking going on. This is an example of where a comic is more effective than in any other medium because if this was a TV show, you would know right away that this is taking place in the 1940s. From the art direction to the costumes to the, you know, the music playing in the background.
Yes.
At one point he says, oh, they were listening to big bad jazz. And we would have heard all that. And then you don't know they're in the 40s for a while. Even when the kids in the back seat of their truck or in the truck bed, he doesn't, he's not really, I mean, he's got some high socks, but he's not really dressed like a kid in the 1940s.
He's got old-timey toys, but it was really subtle, and they kind of had to call it out. And I, you'd like, you notice, like, that's weird that the kid has an old-timey toy. Or you, in those first couple of pages, you have to make sure that you actually look what's on the paper. You look at the date, like, you had to pay attention. So by making you look at the page three times, all of a sudden,
right,
you know, you sort of pick up on those clues.
Or the old truck that is, that drives. Like, it just was subtle, and so they worked really well, because you're like, wait, what, they're in the past? So it was, I was impressed, like you said, like, it was not what I was expecting at all, and it took me a minute to be like, whoa, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
And, but it was, as you said, it was bold and fun.
I'll be honest, I thought, God, I probably got to go read Squirrel Girl. That's what I thought when I finished this.
Oh, there you go.
Because it was so just unexpected and fun and against type, and yeah, it was a lot of things, and I finished it, and I didn't think that I had pick of the week for most of the week this week, and so I finished it, and I was like, I think I'd probably make that pick of the week this week, and then I was like, wait a minute, I had no recollection of you doing it last week, so and then I was like, well, I guess I got my pick chosen, like, I didn't have to work at it because I'd already done it in my mind.
There you go.
That was really fun. And also, and then finally, if there's one more thing, like, we loved the Dan Slott run.
Yeah. Oh, loved it.
And this so wasn't, and this wasn't a lesser version of that. It's a different thing, and I'm cool with that. Don't try to carry that torch. That was for that thing. And, you know, try different things, like fail or succeed, but trying to continue that on never works. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's a new volume. You have to do something new. And as much as I love that Slott run and didn't want it to end, you know, a new writer's not going to be able to do this book in that way he did it.
Nope.
With that mix of Silver Age love. And I mean, to the point where, you know, the cover's a little jarring. It's an Alex Ross cover, and he just did that, which I really like, this Fantastic Four OGN recently, in this style of characters are done on the cover. But it's a whole new cover treatment. It's a whole new modern logo, which is tough because the Fantastic Four is a classic. You know, it's like the classic Marvel font. Mm-hmm. And so you do it in this, as you said, pastel-y sort of pop art style in the art, and then this sort of ultra-modern cover, you know, logo treatment. I was, you know, it's a little, you're like, oh, well, what's going to happen to my, you know, my favorite Marvel characters now? But it was still fun. I mean, so.
There was good thing characterization. There was good relationship talk in this. It was a lot of things. And then, and we will move on, I promise. The fan page, the essay, obligatory essay, and I did not read the whole thing, but it is designed in such a way that there's four numbered things at the top, and Ryan North sent a document to Tom Brevoort that just said, here are the rules. Fantastic Four are fun. Fantastic Four are adventurers. Fantastic Four can do anything, and Fantastic Four are accessible. And I was like, I like this. Like it all talked to me. It was thoughtful. It was, you know, it was, I mean, that was really the thing. It wasn't just like, it was thoughtful. It was a lot of work put into this from a planning perspective. And it gave me good hope for the future.
The teaser cover shows a lot of people wearing Dr. Doom masks.
Mm-hmm.
So Doom. I'm, you know, I was apprehensive about this new volume, not knowing anything about Ryan North. You know, just going through a multi-year awesome run on Fantastic Four, and I'm now interested.
Yep.
To see where it goes. I didn't make a pick, but it probably would have been the new Golden Age number one, the oversized one shot that's leading into the New Justice Society book by Geoff Johns. And this was just like a Geoff Johns special. You know, it's like let's take elements of all of DC continuity throughout the ages and mush together, featuring some terrific art, especially most notably by Jerry Ordway, who I've always loved but appreciate even more now as an older person. You know, that there's nothing here too radical. It's he's taking elements from the history of the Justice Society, even down to Helena Wayne, who was a Bronze Age character on Earth 2, who was the daughter of Batman and Catwoman, who became the Huntress and joined the Justice League or Justice Society back then. So he's taking it all. He's doing it all. He's taking all the toys from the box and making them work together. And that's what he does. And I really like this.
I did too. And in that same way, I knew that all of this didn't make sense, but I also didn't feel like I had to make sense of it. Like, I recognized the characters. I understood the time jumps. I appreciated the different artists. Although, even that to a certain extent is that I kind of stopped paying attention to it because I noticed the Ordway pages, and I was like, all right, look at him go. Yeah. And then other than that, I kind of just read it, and I wasn't really stopping to think about who the artist was.
There was a lot of very similar styled artists. So, like, you know, Gary Frank obviously stood out, and Ordway stood out. But, you know, Todd Nowak and Victor Vogdanovic and Brandon Peterson, they're very similar in style. So it was like, I wasn't trying to necessarily identify them. You know, the Scott Collins bit was pretty identifiable, but other than that.
I would say the only bit that stuck out to me was when Selena came in with huge boobs in a weird low-cut shirt, and she's angry. I was like, where'd this come from? Some weird Arrested Development widow shit.
That's right. In the future, when she's married to Bruce and they have a daughter, she's just, you know.
She looks like Lucille Booth with a huge boob job. It's weird.
It's
and then the Watchmen clown folks show up again. And I was like, oh, shit. This is like, that's kind of when it occurred to me.
I would love for him to really go into why he's so obsessed with integrating the Watchmen into DC. But it's only...
Do you think it maybe has something to do with the fact that, like, he was the guy in charge of that, and he probably had a massive plan and had worked it all out, and then it was kind of taken away and been put off to the side, but he had all this stuff, you know?
Yeah, maybe.
And, you know, he's from what I can understand, he's fairly passionate about telling his stories and doing his stuff, and so, you know, he probably got attracted to those characters for some reason.
Yeah. So the story of this is there's a mysterious figure with red hair and a trench coat who is sort of menacing the Justice Society throughout time.
The Stranger.
And he is stalking them, and in so doing so, he is attacking the Dr. Fates throughout time first and taking them out. And so you see that happening in sort of the 1940s classic first meeting of the Justice Society. You see it in the future with a 30th century Legion of Superheroes contemporary Justice Society team where he kills that Dr. Fate. And so, you know, we don't know why that's happening. We see a sort of a middle-aged Dr. Fate, the 70s and the Bronze Age with Dr. Midnight. You know, something's wrong with him. So you're just seeing all throughout the ages, you're using that as an excuse or as a vehicle to explore the different timelines of Justice Society, including the 50s in which they disband, which it had happened in the comics because of the House and American Committee. And then in the midst of that, we also have the sort of Time Lords going through time trying to fix things, including one of the Time Lords who has decided to go talk to John Wilkes Booth as a kid and try to convince him not to kill Abraham Lincoln. I was like, what is
Didn't
going
work.
On? Did not work.
There's fact, a lot here. Yeah. I want to hang out with Jeff Johns again. That's what I got out of this.
It's 50 pages. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, but it wasn't... I think, to me also, I think the most significant... fun, weird sequence is there's three pages where young Helena decides that she's not going to be scared anymore. So she grabs a kitchen knife, hears something downstairs, go downstairs, stab someone, turn the page, it's Batman. Now, we have not been told that who she is yet at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I knew, but yeah.
Right, but and what I thought was, how did Batman just get stabbed by a little girl? Then you've got this next page... where they're in the kitchen. By the way, this page is magnificent, by the way. There's a bloody knife on a counter. There's a great shot on the left hand, like almost like a left hand stacked sort of tall panel where he's standing there looking at her sternly. And it doesn't, it's Batman, but it isn't. Like everything's kind of weird. And she looks at him and he just goes, I'm Batman. And I was like, why is this person telling? And then does mom know? And which is the last panel. So if you don't know, it's all weird up until they put the button on it and it makes sense. Right. And I just thought, wow, that page is magnificent.
I hate the coloring on this.
Oh, I love it.
I mean, in general, the coloring, I just hate when they color Batman with that light blue. Like he should be wearing black.
See, to me, first of all, they're in the kitchen. And so this is all like a sign that this isn't Batman because it's really bright out.
Yeah.
And B, I know what you're saying, but that's what Batman looked like to me at first. That color, the superpowers color. So I like it. I understand what you mean. It doesn't make sense, but I see those colors on Batman. It makes me happy.
This was a tour de force. This was like, you know, we haven't had a lot of Jeff Johns in the last 10 years as he's been, you know, in various stages running the media side of DC. And they seem to like, okay, you can. I think he had conflicts with DiDio on things, is for what we heard.
Yeah.
But now that DiDio's gone, he seems to be back in the fold, at the very least, just to be in this GSA corner. And, you know, he thrives in that corner. And in addition to all that's going on, in addition to all of that, which is what had happened at the end of his Flashpoint book, is that he's introducing these 12 new characters, and they're all given little who's who character sheets at the end. And these are all new characters who are being introduced into the timeline as having been around the whole time. So they all have fake backstories and fake first appearance dates and everything. And so there's a lot. I mean, Mr. Miracle's obviously not new, but it must be a new version of him. But it's all, you know, Quiz Kid and Salem the Witch Girl and Ladybug and the Golden Cherry Age Bomb. Aquaman. So, you know, go nuts, Jeff Johns, in your Justice Society bubble. I love it.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and it like I said, like it should have. There's a lot of instances where this might be confusing or whatever, but I didn't care. I just went with it, and I was like, all right, I'm going to get it. You know, for all of this stuff moving around, it was much less confusing than it could have been. But just clear that it was not standard continuity.
Right, and DC continuity is broken. In fact, you are going the same way.
Yes.
Like, DC continuity is broken. There is no real continuity. So, you know, why not put him in this side bubble and just let him run wild with all of DC continuity and pick and choose what he wants, because it's all broken anyway.
And what he's going to get is the characterizations and themes of the characters in just as pure a version as if it was in continuity. Like, you're going to get the same that Tom Taylor's doing.
Yes.
Like, it doesn't matter. Like if you're going to tell these characters in a historically accurate and compelling way.
Right.
You know, and he is. So go for it.
Speaking of historically accurate and compelling, we have Love Everlasting #4. From Image Comics. Well, they've been reprinting these in Image, but this is the first new issue for you, for Josh and I. They were originally running on Tom King and Elsa Chartier's.
Charretier.
That's all wrong. They're Substack, and so now Image is also publishing them. So this is the first issue we haven't read in a while. I actually reread all three issues previous.
Because
I really didn't want to lose the details of this book, which details matter. And I had fun reading those because it was so strange. And this book continues to be strange in that I know that there's a conceit here, and I know there's something going on with time travel or something with this girl, Joan. But I swear to you, I was like 7 pages into this book, and I had forgotten all of that. And I just got swept up in the story.
It's really good. Like, each of the issues is done in such a way, but this is the best issue, I believe, of the things. I mean, you know, you and I are history nerds, so this thing that takes place outside of the lines in World War I, you know, that's going to be compelling in a certain way, and I know
that... But I literally forgot. I was like, I was so caught up in the story of this soldier who keeps coming back to this bar every time he's off the lines and one of his buddies dies, and he's in love with the singer, Joan, and, you know, she has affection for him, but doesn't necessarily, you know, she's in love with him, but, you know, but she has affection for him because he's a young soldier. And I was literally, I was swept up in the romance, Josh. Swept up in it. It was,
I was like,
there's a whole thing going on here. Shit.
Right. And but the sadness of it is that, like, it keeps going on. You really get your money's worth on these pages. It's a little longer than normal. Yeah. You know, and it's not all that. If I'm going to look at these pages, all the pages are just two people, and there's a lot of words, and it shouldn't work, but it does for a lot of reasons. It's super compelling. It's sad. It's sad as hell to watch what happens as his friends just keep dying, and he keeps not dying, and he comes back in, you know, and yeah, it's awful. It was really compelling, and the art does a lot. Like, I know that we have said before, like, oh, it reminds us of Darwin a lot, but this is like Darwin mixed with Eduardo Risso.
Yeah, it's not. It's yes. Yes.
It's gorgeous. It's so gorgeous. I mean, Matt Hollingsworth just coloring the living shit out of this thing.
It's one of the best looking books out there for sure.
Yeah. I mean, like, for a long time, I was like, I want to write comics and do whatever. I read this and I was like, what were you even thinking?
I didn't even notice this while reading it, but I noticed it now as I'm fast scrolling through it. A, almost all of the times you see the guy, his eyes are closed or down. Do you know what I mean? Like he's just constantly looking at the ground because he's just so burdened with the pain of what he's going through.
I don't think it starts like that. Like at the first few pages.
Like he's constantly looking either at his drink or at the floor. I mean, obviously sometimes he's looking at her, but for the most part, I'm just scrolling through. At least half of the times you see his face, you just see his eyelids.
Yeah, by the end, that's definitely the case.
It's interesting. I mean, so each one of these issues has been a different story of romance with this character, Joan. And some of them have been more disjointed than others, you know, jumping around time or whatever. But, you know, four issues in, we still don't know what's going on. But I don't necessarily even care right now because, like I said, these little one-shot stories of romance have been so compelling. I mean, you know, we had that high school one with the librarian. We had the Old West one. And we had the sort of rich upstairs, downstairs maid and the manor one. And, like, They've all been really compelling. I almost don't want there to be a conceit. I kind of just like it.
You've been saying that all along.
But yeah, I mean, I'm interested, but I'm also like, these are great.
And when he does, it will be good.
Yeah.
Like, it'll work out.
He just continues to find these, not find, but work with these terrific artists.
Yeah.
Who?
No, he's got a great eye for folks to work with, for sure.
Did you read Gospel number 1 from Image Comics?
No, I just saw it. I was like, wait, what's the next thing on here? And I thought, I should look that up, but then you started talking to me. So go ahead.
I didn't know what it was, but I looked at the cover. The cover was interesting. I looked at the inside art, and I thought, oh, that's good. So I said, I'll check it out. And, you know, you open it up, and it says England, 1538, and it tells you so what's going on. And I'm like, is this a comic about the Reformation? Like, is it? And, you know, 'cause that's what the whole intro is. And so then I open the page, and it's this girl being chased by a giant boar. And it's like, okay, so it's the Reformation with supernatural. But then it's not, because that's just a tall tale being told by, like, a singing bard. The real boar was just regular-sized. This is just a comic about the Reformation, Josh, so far.
Okay, I'm hearing you.
With art that's very similar to Michael Lark. This is written and drawn by Will Morris. I don't know who Will Morris is.
Ooh,
but
what's the publisher?
Image.
Okay, gotcha.
I don't know who Will Morris is, but very much in the school of a Michael Lark type of art. Okay. And, you know, it's so far just the story of these people in this village during the Reformation, which, if you don't know, is when England split off of from the Pope and from Catholicism. And Protestantism.
I wouldn't say England. Because it took place in Europe and then made its way to England later,
right?
Which allowed Henry VIII. Anyway,
well, yeah. I mean, this is taking place in England, so I just said England.
Okay, but, gotcha.
You know, it's so that's where we are here. And there's a lot of tension with the Bible being printed in English instead of Latin. And I was like, are we doing this? There's you know, a couple of modern things that don't really make sense. Like the two main characters is a girl with blue hair and a black guy. And it's like, would this have been in 1500s? But whatever, it doesn't matter.
Right.
And it's just...
If I can just provide, if there's context for folks. It's the idea that the Martin Luther had his treatises. And the idea was that you don't need the church or the Catholic Church to commune with God. You can do it on your own and read the Bible yourself. And that is the big schism that changes everything.
Right, because Bible was in Latin and only people who could read Latin could commune with God. And that was usually the educated priests. And
right. But the idea is still that in order to commune with God, you have to go through these channels. You have to go through this organization. And they're saying, no, you can have a relationship with God on your own. That's like the basic of it. But yeah, which is because printing presses were finally available and they could, you know, King James Bible, blah, blah, blah.
So it was, I was fascinated by this. Like I was really, you see the giant boar, you're like, okay, well, it's a supernatural Reformation, but it's not.
I probably looked at the cover and went,
yeah. And then originally, I mean, I liked the cover art, but I was like, okay, another fantasy book, but it's not really that. It's this girl who's trying to, you know, make a name for herself. So she keeps trying to have adventures and she has her friend who is this popular, you know, storyteller who goes from village to village telling stories. He tells these tall tales of her adventures. And one of them involves a giant boar, but in reality we see it was just a regular sized boar. And when we see the actual real, you know, events of it. And it's, I mean, I don't even know what this book is really about yet, but it was just incredibly surprising and interesting and fun to read. And I thought the art was terrific. We do at one point flash to the future or to the present, and there's something going on that's related to the past. But we spend most of the time in the past. Yeah, I was surprised by this, and I think you would really like it. I was going to recommend it to you if you hadn't checked it out, but the week got away from me. But I was really surprised. I was like, are we doing this?
I thought only Stephanie Phillips had the ability to do comics like that.
Right. It was like there's been very, very few of these. And, you know, there still could be some monster. I mean, right now it's like seems to be pretty grounded, but who knows, you know.
I feel like if you're going to have a book with a supernatural thing, you have to put in the first issue so people know.
Well, I mean, at the very end, there's a dude wearing a goat. There might be a goat dude at the very end. It might be the devil, but...
That's almost not considered supernatural in this context.
Right.
He's just a guy. He's a character.
There's a dude wearing a goat head. He might have hooved feet. I can't tell. I mean, yes, you can kind of see it. But for the most part, it was just like regular stuff going on.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. We had two Mark Russell books this week. And I was struck by the fact that they both followed a very similar structure in that we basically read an essay being written by both main characters and just watched the action. And I didn't necessarily love that style.
I noticed that as well, and I feel the same way.
But I thought that Traveling to Mars, number one, from Ablaze Comics. Ablaze.
I've never even heard of that. Never heard of that.
They seem to be an imprint of Archaea.
No kidding.
Anyway, this was the better one. Mark Russell, Roberto Dakar, Melly. The other one was Billionaire Island, which I don't think we loved the original Billionaire Island series. Like, it was fun, but it didn't really have a story. And I think that's what's still happening there. But
yeah, I mean, we talked about this. It's a great number of social political treatises mixed up in what's supposed to be sort of a comedy, but it's a little aimless. I think we said this, like when he has a superhero story to tell in the middle and he puts that in there, all of a sudden it gives it a focus and a forward direction that doesn't really exist in some of these other ones. Yep. However, for some reason, I was reading this and I was like, wait, is this Rick Remender? But it wasn't. Like, you know why I'm saying that, right? Does that make any sense to you?
It was a little Rick Remender in him.
Yeah. You've got this guy and they're sending him to, it's grim, man. He's got, I'm going to try to explain it in a short couple of sentences. There is a man and he's just kind of a regular everyday loser. And he finds out he has stage 4 cancer. In that way, there other corporations and nations are trying to figure out how to claim mineral deposits that have been found on Mars.
Right.
And so the trick is to get your flag planted first, and then you can say you own it.
The first person to step foot on Mars will claim all the mineral, the rights to it.
Right. But the problem is they don't know how to get people home. So they think, wait a minute, let's find somebody who's not going to live and doesn't want to come home. They will claim it for us, and then we will pay them off. And so that is what happens.
Right. So they'll send the robots up there to mine the minerals, but to actually... claim it needs to be human, and they also find out that his particular cancer will not progress while he's in zero G, so he will actually not be dying while on the trip and feel better. And so there's like a slight benefit for him in addition to the money for his family. And this guy's name is Roy Livingston, who is a fairly good artist. Well, not fairly good. He's a good artist. Because we were reading from his journal as he's talking about this, has the handwriting of a comic book letterer.
Sure.
And I thought this was interesting, you know, very much played into the sort of corporate, you know, it turns out he thinks he's being recruited by the U.S. government, and up to the point where he's on the ship, turns out it's basically the Impossible Burger people. It's like the fake meat people.
I did really like, though, that he goes, you know, I didn't even think to ask. And I thought that's actually incredibly realistic.
Yeah.
Like, just like, who's doing this? I don't know. He's just making assumptions. You're not asking. He's got all of these things on his mind so you can buy it. Right at the beginning, he's sitting there, and I saw this right away. I'm guessing you didn't. I went, that's Stevie Ray Vaughan's hat. And then there's a guitar behind him. But I was like, that's weird. And then as we go on, like, somebody gives him the present of Stevie Ray Vaughan's hat, which, by the way, is the same. It's sending it out into space to never come back. I was like, you're just throwing away Stevie Ray Vaughan's hat. It's a very famous hat. And he takes a guitar with him. And I was like, all right, that's cool. It was so weird, but they actually called it out. I was like, this is such a strange dude, but it told me a lot about the character. It's a very specific thing that he's a guy of a certain age, and that's the kind of music he likes, and that told me a ton about where he's coming from and where Mark Russell was coming from, too.
Yeah, he's a guy who
you know, is middle-aged, has had a disappointing life. He's got a mustache. He's, you know, got sort of shaggy hair, and he's dying. And so this is like one last adventure, something he can do for his family and do for Earth, which has, you know, run out of minerals. And it was good. I thought it's a 4-issue miniseries. It's short, and I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes from here, because the whole thing is when he gets to Mars, they're like, well, how do you want to die? And he says, well, I guess I'll just take off my helmet. And they're like, oh, no, God, you don't want to do that. And they explain why. You don't, like, it was interesting. There was a lot of some fun science.
He's apparently never seen Total Recall.
Right. It's like, you'll boil from the inside. It'll be incredibly painful. I thought this was fun. I mean, it wasn't great because, again, this style of telling a story in which we're basically reading thoughts instead of – it's a classic tell, don't show. Puts you at arm's length a bit, but – I liked it. I thought the art was terrific.
Still worked. The art was terrific. You know, it's like another one of these people who shows up you've never seen, and just a really good, because you can have a great artist, and then you can have a low rent team, you know, coloring it and producing it, and that was not the case here. Like, it was, the coloring was good. It was a strong visual presence for this story, and the faces on all the characters are fantastic. The guy who's in charge of the company, he's got a great face. You know, the guy himself, he's drawn to be quite gaunt and skinny, mm-hmm. in a very realistic way. The way his clothes fit, the way his posture is. I didn't love it. I didn't think it was amazing, but it's pretty damn good.
Yeah, I was impressed. And it was, you know, it was interesting. Mark Russell's always interesting, even if what he's doing doesn't necessarily always work.
I have at some point become a fairly big Jonathan Luna fan.
That's so interesting. I don't know that about you.
He'll do these little stories. This is Jonathan Luna, who did every single aspect of this book. And it's just a fable.
It's
about an Italian knight who goes, you know, like defeats a demon in Sicily somewhere, and is writing a letter back to his wife, I'm going to be back soon. He goes into the woods. He finds this beautiful young woman by herself, and that's weird. And it turns out she's a witch, and she captured him and the other people. And he makes a sacrifice, like one of those knightly sacrifices, to help other people. And it's sort of about love and being loved. And I mean, it's a great little fable. In comic book form, and I really enjoyed it. I'm a Luna fan. Who knew?
I was not me. I was surprised. Do a powerbomb number 6, 6 of 7, and we talked earlier about Tom King, and no one's really doing it like he is, and no one's also really doing it like Daniel Warren Johnson. And this is a textbook example of raising the stakes, in which we think the story is over. And look, all the things about this is the most dynamic art. There's some incredible pages here, incredible panels. We've said it before. But really what I want to talk about was the story, which is that the whole thing has been this tag team champ, this cosmic tag team championship being run by this necromancing demon who promises that one of your dead loved ones will return if you win the championship. And this whole time, this father-daughter team have been from Earth have been fighting in it, although they didn't realize they were father-daughter until, or at least the daughter didn't realize that until last issue. But,
by the way, you had mentioned this could only happen in the comic. I don't buy that at all.
Right, of
course.
In the
comic book, fine.
Yes. So then they don't actually win. They lose the championship at the end of the last issue to this other team. And the problem is that team, you know, they're not friends, so they have two different people they want to come back. So they start fighting each other in the ring, and they end up killing each other. And so by default, the father-daughter win. Okay.
Stakes raised. That's bullshit Ex Machina, by the way. Right. Don't care. But
so
same
then
thing.
They go to the
Wizard of Oz? They go to the Wizard of Oz? Is that what happens?
The Rejuvenation Hall. And the guy's like, so listen, I am a necromancer, but I actually don't have enough power to bring your wife/mother back. So sorry. But there's actually is someone who can do that. And he turns out he's a big wrestling fan. So if you go to this other tournament and you guys defeat him in a 2-on-1 match, he will bring your person back. And they go, cool, who is it? And it's God. And I was just like, fuck it, let's do it. Like, we see God's wearing like an old, like sort of like Roman mask.
See, this is the thing about, I've said before, and I believe it to be true, is that comic books and wrestling, pro wrestling, share aspects. And
oh, yeah, for sure they do. Yeah.
It is the next level stake raising that is quite silly.
Right.
And then just doing that, leaning into it and selling it. And he did both things at the same time in this comic book.
Yeah, this was also in the running in my head for pick of the week in terms of the best books of the week. And I know it's in the short section of the show, but it's what he's doing is incredible. Sure. Like from every aspect, he's writing and drawing. The art is so lived in, and he doesn't cheat on anything. And every panel is chock full of detail and life. And then he just expertly raises the stakes at every issue to the point now where what you want to do happen is you cannot get any bigger or the story will burst. And that's where you want to be towards the end. And so that's where we are, is where these two characters now have to wrestle God.
Okay. Yeah.
Awesome. Those are the books we want to talk about. This was a fun week. I enjoyed this week of comics, and it was a good week.
It was. It totally was.
But we always have to talk about the patron pick, which is the book that the patrons over at patreon.com/ifanboy vote to add to the show, to add to the rundown. And this week, by an overwhelming margin, I mean overwhelming, was Wildcats number 1 from DC Comics, written by Matthew Rosenberg and drawn by Steven Segovia, with colors by Elmer Santos and letters by Ferran Delgado. And this is another bite at the apple of the Wildstorm universe that is now owned by DC, or has been for a while.
My first question for you is, would you have read this?
No.
No.
I am over it. I'm over the Wildstorm.
Had you ever been a Wildcats person?
Oh, in the beginning, Jim Lee, forget it. That was one of my favorite book coming out of the original.
But then after that, Joe Casey had 2 volumes.
We read the Joe Casey stuff, and that was great. The corporate sort of, but that was, they were still separate. They weren't in the DC universe then.
Sure. And then
Sleeper, all that stuff.
Warren Ellis.
No,
Sleeper was like a continuation.
I read a couple of those, but I know you really love that series. But I read
The Wildstorm. Yeah,
I read a couple. I didn't really love it.
Okay.
Their time has come and gone. Like we're done.
I remember when the New 52 started, that was their first real attempt at integrating it.
Yes,
and I was looking forward to it enough, that I tried a bunch of them, but it's like you said, like it didn't quite work. I think it doesn't work.
Anytime like Batman's like, oh, it's Grifter, I'm like, oh, this doesn't make it. No, this is wrong.
I mean, Grifter is the only character who really had a shot at fitting into anything in this.
Right. He keeps being the main
And
character.
Matt Rosenberg has sort of had the keys on him for a while, both in backup stories in, I think, Batman or Detective, one or the other, and then in the Urban Legends, he's been around, Grifter.
Right.
Who is, I kind of think of him like Wolverine, but mixed with, I don't know. It's Wolverine if he was a spy mercenary. And then there's another character in there too, like almost like Constantine. Like he's out on his own. So I love Matt Rosenberg's writing. I think that he has a way of elevating things that shouldn't be any good.
Right.
I like Wildcats. I would like it to work out, but you are not wrong that it hasn't. I really did love the Wildstorm.
You did, yeah.
But as it being part of DC, I don't think that was what going on in that.
And it's minor. I mean, here we it's really only like they're in Star City, and at one point in like a one panel joke, Nightwing and who was the other character show up? Nightwing and Batgirl. But there was just like a one panel joke, and they're never seen. Like it's not really like, oh, here, the Justice League's around. It's just sort of like they're in the DC universe, but not. It just doesn't really work for me.
So here was the deal, and I'm gonna just get it was fine. It was, I was expecting more. I thought maybe if anybody's going to crack this or at least give us something that works, it's going to be Rosenberg.
Right.
And it wasn't bad, but it didn't really bring anything to the table that hadn't been there. The integration with DC, where it falls apart for me is that the whole backstory of this is that there are the two, the Daemonite and the Cherubim. By the way, this was the very first time I've read Wildcats for years. I went, oh, it's demons and cherubim. It's angels and demons. It never occurred to me that's what it was, by the way. I was like, oh, my God, I'm an idiot. Like, they just said it and I saw the words.
Well, that's because you first read it the first time when you're like 13. And so that imprints on your brain and you don't think to investigate it any further.
100%. But I just went, oh, cherubim. It's right there. And I really like the characters and how they interact with each other, but there's nothing different about this than reading the Joe Casey stuff, or the Alan Moore. Alan Moore's Wildcats is fantastic.
Yeah.
That's all there already. And so that backstory, that huge, you know, they were here before, like the Eternals or whatever, sticking that into the DC universe doesn't work for me.
No.
Because if that was the problem, Batman would have been working on that shit all along.
Yeah. I mean, when you asked before, like, yes, my fandom of Wildcats began in 1990, whatever, two or whatever it was, and it ended basically with Joe Casey. Like, through Alan Moore, through Joe Casey, like, I really enjoyed it. And then it's just like, once 2011 hits and they try to integrate it into DC, it's a square peg in a round hole situation. But you know what? Let's remove that from this comic because, again, it's only really the location of the story. I just thought this, like you said, it was just kind of fine. Like, I like Rosenberg a lot. He's very funny. He's a talented writer. He does really great books. I didn't think this had a spark in it that his books usually have. And I thought the art also was just fine. Like, it wasn't good. It wasn't bad. Like, to me, I finished it and I was like, that was a comic, as you used to say, you know, like, it was fine.
Yeah. Well, as we were talking about it and I was trying to figure out like what it is I liked about it, when it did before, I don't remember anything about this.
Yeah.
I don't remember what this was that brought anything to the table that we hadn't seen before. It wasn't bad. I was fine reading it, you know, but every time the integration with DC came up, it took me out of it immediately. It doesn't work. It made me want to read old Wildcats. It made me want to read the Alan Moore stuff.
I mean, I guess, was Fairchild, was she from Gen 13?
Maybe. I don't know. I was like, I kind of recognize this, but not really.
At some point, Grifter became the focus of these Wildcat stories. And I don't know when that happened, but it wasn't that way originally. Like, he was like everyone's favorite character because he was the cool badass in the 90s. But,
right,
you know, they had a big team of lots of characters. And I feel like every Wildcats story I read now is about Grifter. And it's just like, I don't necessarily even care.
I think he's the hook. I think that's the, you know, you're supposed to be. Zealot. Yeah, you know what? There were a lot of, and then, like, they went through. I was like, oh, yeah, Maxine Manchester. Zealot's in here. Jacob Marlowe. There's some really interesting character. Yeah. There's some really.
Deathblow.
Which is also a Seinfeld movie. You're gonna miss the death blow. You know, like, it was reminding me of things,
right?
And that's all it was. It was making me want to go back. I was like, man, I should read those Alan Moore once again. Like, it wasn't bad, but
no, it wasn't a bad comic. I just didn't care, and I just don't think it works. And I think they keep trying. I get it. It's Jim Lee's characters. He sold in DC. He's one of the executives who runs the company. They're going to keep trying. They can keep running them out there, but it just doesn't work.
I don't know why they have to be part of the DC universe. Just stop that. Write a new Wildcat story.
It's that whole ethos, you know, everything has to be connected. It's like vertigo.
No, but don't. Don't.
It's dumb.
That's what's killing it, is that, I mean, maybe it's possible that the property has run its course. You know?
Yeah.
That might have been all there was to it.
I mean, you run it out enough times, and it doesn't make any kind of blip on the market or with the audience. I mean, yeah, maybe.
I think if it was going to go anywhere, and this is what we saw, is it happened already for one thing. You know, it became Joe Casey's thing, which was interesting. There was a third volume he was the second, and there was a third volume, and it wasn't as great. Although that was when we were introduced to Dustin Nguyen as an artist.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had Sleeper, and you had Authority, and you had Stormwatch, not necessarily in those orders. That was the next natural progression of those things. But then, since then, what? Nothing.
Yeah. I mean, just Grifter shows up here and there. Mm-hmm. They tried to make Grifter part of the Batman family. Like, they would do, like, the you know, those promotional shots, the whole Batman family standing on rooftops, and Grifter would always be there. And you're like, why the fuck is Grifter here?
I mean, to be fair, why the fuck are most of those people there?
Why is Duke here and why is Grifter here?
Why? There must be like an iTunes review of us that is like, why can't they get over fucking Duke? What's wrong with those guys? And to you, I say, sir, you're not wrong. Like, it's, I don't even know if he's still around anymore.
He is.
We can't get over him.
It's a running joke, but yeah.
That's fine.
Well, it just doesn't work. It doesn't.
His name's Duke.
It's actually the signal.
There's only one Duke, and it's Clayton Abernathy. And I don't want to hear it. Actually, I think Clayton Abernathy is Hawk.
Hold on. Yeah, isn't it like...
Stop the show.
Pause. Hit pause. What is Duke's real name? Duke's real name.
Oh, I know it. Hauser? Something Hauser?
Conrad Hauser.
Boom!
Duke is a wasp.
I think they all are.
Yeah, probably. Oh, certainly Clayton Abernathy.
Yeah.
All right. So that was your Patreon pick, Wildcats number one. We didn't. We forgot last week to rate and say
you
our.
You know what
Patreon.
They should do?
So yeah,
they should. They should. They should try to integrate G.I. Joe with the Marvel universe. I'd read that.
Well, they did.
Yeah.
In the 80s, didn't they?
Like they and had. Then they should. Quickly
they had Spider-Man. They had Spider-Man fight Transformers.
Yeah.
Anyway, I give Wildcats a 2 stars out of 5.
I'll give it 2.5.
I'm not sticking with it. You are. You are.
Probably.
It's okay. We all do irrational things.
I really like the writer. I really do like the property. It's just, it's like buying an album of a band you really like. Oh, like they keep coming up, but they're like, maybe this one will be good, you know, and they haven't had a good one in years. And I'm not talking about Rosenberg. I'm talking about Wildcats.
Yeah.
Like, that's a group. Yeah, I'll probably. I mean, like, I think if I read the next one and there isn't a hook, I probably won't keep going, but I want to give it a little bit of a shot.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. Every patron gets a vote to add a book to the rundown. Thanks to all the patrons who vote. But if you give it the $5 or higher level on this very show live, you get a superpower bestowed upon you, or in this case, upon someone you request. We've had that before. Before we did the son of a patron. Mm-hmm. This time we're doing a girlfriend of a patron. Her name is Karen. And patron girlfriend Karen's power is that she can control the fatigue level in anyone else. She can up your fatigue level or reduce your fatigue level. So, you know.
And she'd get to me and she'd try to do her Jedi shit and be like, he's too powerfully strong. I can't.
His level of fatigue is too strong, even for my abilities. And she would fall down. There'd be a little trickle of blood down her nose. And, but kind of like a telepath or someone sure. Like Jean Grey, she can raise, make you really, really tired. Or if you're really tired, make you really not tired. She has that ability.
Which could work both good and bad in both directions.
Sure.
Like, yeah. What if you're really tired and want to go to sleep? And she's like, ramp that shit up. Yep. You're like, I can't go to sleep.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So it's useful and also, you know, dangerous unless she's faced with her nemesis, Josh Lanigan, which is...
The best powers are both, have both good and evil connotations. Absolutely. Because that's where the drama comes from.
So thanks to Kevin for being a patron, and thanks for Karen for, you know, putting up with Kevin, I guess. I don't know. Maybe they've got a great relationship. I don't know.
Sure.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go support the show directly. We thank everyone as a patron. We try to make it fun for them. They've unlocked things for all of you to enjoy. Most of the shows that we do now, in terms just of output, are shows that the patrons unlocked, and everyone gets to enjoy them, and thanks for doing that. We have a community of fun people. We have a Discord server. There's a Facebook group, I believe, still. And we try to make it fun. We have monthly hangouts that we do with them where we just get silly and... you know, we try to make it fun, and hopefully you enjoy being a patron, and hopefully if you've ever thought about being one, you will join up. And we have our new stretch goals coming in January, so hopefully there'll be some new thing, fun things for you to build towards.
Turns out having new stretch goals is, in fact, a stretch goal.
Yeah, that's true. And so hopefully, you know, if you ever consider being a patron, even if you wanted to be a $1 patron, that's fine. At patreon.com/iFanboy, we thank you for doing that. iFanboy.threadless.com is our t-shirt store. We have 12 shirts. We have a couple more in the incubation stage. It may be a while until we get to those because we have been kicking ideas around, but we haven't really nailed it yet. So it may be, well, it will be beginning of next year when those shirts will start coming out. But you can, in the meantime, iFanboy.threadless.com. I wore my Stay Home Read Comics baseball tee the other day. I really like that shirt.
I'm just impressed it still fits you. Well done.
Well, I bought it big, and one size up, and that fits fine.
Yeah. I bought it big, which was a stretch, and then I think it shrunk a little, and now, well, there was a pandemic.
I'm very diligent about not drying my shirts because I have the you and I have the long torso.
Sure.
And shirts shrink even a little, all of a sudden it's a, it becomes a belly shirt.
Yep.
And no one needs that anymore.
No, no one. Well, it'll probably be a thing soon. It might be a thing now. I don't know.
Support, direct donations via PayPal happen there. Digital tip jars, like I said, our one listener in Altadena. We're talking to you. You're the one who won the big lotto, and we appreciate you. We love you. You're our favorite.
It's time.
Ephemeral.com/Amazon. That's where you can shop. We're heading into shopping season, according to every commercial. And also, I went to the Grove, the big shopping center, last night to see Black Panther, and I was like, oh, Santa's workshop is up. It's not even Thanksgiving yet. It's shopping time. So if you feel like you're shopping via Amazon, you can always go to fmo.com/Amazon. That's where you can find our Booksplode books. If you feel like getting people comics, but also a general shopping link, and we thank everyone who uses that. And finally, bookshop.org. I just got a big shipment of bookshop.org books that I just ordered. It's a way
Connor,
to...
Stop buying books.
I can't help it. It's a way for you to shop for books and support local bookstores. It's basically a collective of local bookstores that will ship to you just like any other service. And you can have your profits go to a specific store like I do, or you can just have it go to a general fund that goes to the collective of stores. It's a great service. I really recommend them. You get them just as fast as any other service, maybe a day later, but you don't need that book right away. If you did, you're not going to store and buy it yourself.
You're not going to read it for years.
Right. So
Connor's what Vegas calls a whale.
Bookshop.org. So let's do an email. At least one. Yeah. You pick.
Like, you know what? I'm going to do the first one and see if we can get through it, and okay. Then we'll go for the second one.
Okay.
Mark has a question, then I'm going to give you some context after. Mark asked, I was hoping you could help. You seem like the obvious place for this question. By the way, we're both flattered about that.
Absolutely.
What is the correct way to eat pizza in a restaurant? And my initial, that's the end of the question. Okay. And my initial thought was, who would ask that but a Brit? So I went back, I looked at the email address, .co.uk.
Right.
And if you're not sure, what that means is if you go into a pizza place in the UK, I can't speak to the rest of Europe, you will see people eating pizzas with forks and knives.
Well, okay, so this is important. So we've had a lot of discussion about pizza over the years because of the way pizza's been drawn in comics. The way to eat pizza in a restaurant depends on the pizza. And what I mean by that is most of your pizzas that have like a hearty crust that you can hold, you eat with your hands. However, if you're eating a true Neapolitan style pizza that's like a super thin crust, you really can't hold that. So it's designed to eat with a fork and knife. Like that's how people eat pizza in Italy. So I have no problem. If it's a super thin Neapolitan crust, eating with a fork and knife, I've done that myself. It's just not, you can't hold it. Especially if there's toppings, it'll fall right off. They're designed to be eaten with a fork and knife.
There are cultural mores here, though, because we boorish Americans pick up anything with our hands and just shove it in our maws.
Well, you know, food is designed for that. You know, especially bread-based foods. Like, you know, you get bread to the table, you eat with your hands. You eat a taco with your hands off the table.
Having been so it's been a while since I've been in the UK,
right.
But I was there on business at one point, and across from my hotel was a business called Pizza Express. I have since learned that this is a chain.
Mm-hmm.
There are many of them. They have pizza. It was fine pizza. It was quite delightful. Also, it was on an expense account, so who gives a shit? but I noticed when I was sitting there and I was by myself, you know, everybody else in there. Looking smart in their work clothes and whatnot, we're eating their pizza with their fork and knives. Now, this is pretty standard pizza. It's a circle shape, the pie wedge, you know, not super thin crust, not super thick. It was just pretty, you know, if you got it at a takeout place, you'd be like, yeah, that's all right. When I got the pizza, I thought, well, I have a choice to make here. Do I win in Rome it or do I boorish American it?
Right.
I boorish Americaned it. And I thought, you know, but I think if you were a British person and you were there and you've been there, and you would just do what everybody else did, which would be eat with a knife and fork. And that's not incorrect in that context.
I mean, listen, if you're like about to go into surgery, you don't want to get your hands all greasy, then you have a fork and knife. But otherwise, if it's a hearty pizza that you can pick up, then you should be eating it with your hands, even in a restaurant.
But I believe also pizza doesn't exist well in an upscale environment.
I mean, there's certainly lots of upscale places you can get pizza.
Yes. Yes, but like if it's a one thing on the menu and everything else is a fork and knife kind of thing, and then you're there and just grabbing it with your hands, you know.
But you wouldn't say that about weird. When they bring bread to the table. Well, like there's food is designed that way.
Perhaps. You Perhaps. Know?
But again, if it's a thin crust, which is not what Pizza Express is, but if it's a thin crust Neapolitan style pizza, go for it with a fork and knife. I remember going to a place here in LA and I tried to pick it up and everything just fell right off. I was like, okay, that's not how this works.
Did you feel conspicuous using the fork and knife though?
No, because people were, because it was a thin crust pizza.
Fair.
But my inclination was to pick it up. No, because sure. I see like it's just not going to work structurally.
You know what
this is an engineering problem.
Pizza Express, better than Pizza Hut. Not even close. Yeah. When I was a kid, Pizza Hut was my bar none favorite. I was like, this is the best thing on earth. And then a trip to the Pizza Hut on Route 13 in Ithaca ended my entire run of Pizza Hut consumption for the rest of my life. Oh, I did. I did indeed, sir.
Do you remember that one time? Let's talk about pizza. Do you remember that one time? So we had a really great local pizza place in college that was right outside of campus and everybody ordered from it and it was great. Really, really great. But one time we ordered Papa John's. Do you remember that? From your apartment?
Not really.
You, me, Simmons, Van Neel.
Did we get sick?
No. Well, I think we ordered it because they were doing a promotion. They were trying to break into the campus and break the hole that Rogan's had on it. So they gave like these giant discount coupons, and we were like, well, fuck it. We're cheap. We're poor college students. Let's just order this Papa John's pizza. I remember it took like an hour where Rogan's like, you had it in like 15 minutes, and it just wasn't good. And I think that's the last time I've ever had Papa John's.
I remember Ron and Gordon, Ron, founder of the show, and Gordon, the intern, if you're an old-timey person, they loved Papa John's for some reason, like, and would get it. And then also, I had an ongoing joke that went on for years, where if we ever got Papa John's, this is so dumb, it's not for anybody, it's just for you, Steve Van Neel, who was my roommate in college and then afterwards for a few years, we would hide the little garlic sauce package in the other person's stuff if we got one. And so like when you went to bed, you'd find the little Papa John's garlic sauce and it would just get passed around like that for years. I just remembered that. That's really funny. I worked at Rogan's.
You were ordering Papa John's in LA?
I might have at some point.
Oh,
I don't know.
My God, Josh.
It's not like there's good pizza in LA.
It's better pizza now, but not. You're never going to be as good as New York pizza.
And I was, and like we're going back to poor. You thought I was poor in college,
right?
Early poor in LA was pretty like whatever. It's $5. Give it to me.
Del Taco. I'll take it. 35-cent taco.
I've never eaten that. not one time.
We went there once. Anyway, and like we got like 55 tacos for like $10. Or something less than that, maybe $5.
I think what threw me off about the Del Tacos is like I saw fries on the menu and I was like, forget this.
I don't know why you'd go there when Taco Bell is there when you have no money, but we did it.
I've only eaten at Taco Bell like a handful of times in my life either, and it was like a dare.
Wouldn't this
be funny?
Let's just keep talking about food in college. There was a Taco Bell that opened up in our college town, and that's the only time I really went to Taco Bell was my roommate Casey was like, want to go to Taco Bell? And I was like, sure.
She liked Taco Bell.
So we went.
So I worked at Rogan's. I delivered pizzas for a while, and I wasn't surprised when the place went down for drug charges later. That's what I'll say.
Well, the pizza was
because
magnificent.
I was like, hey, hello, fellow pizza delivery people. Oh, I'm scared, actually. Like, it was some dregs of the earth business in the delivery crew.
Cocaine. That was a problem at that place. But
yeah. I hope all of you enjoyed this part of the show.
But that was a legitimately good pizza. Like I say this as a New Yorker. Like it was like, holy shit, this is legitimately really good pizza. And it was like cheap and you got it in 15 minutes because it was right off campus. And they gave you free sodas, which caused me to have a caffeine withdrawal situation. And I had to stop drinking Pepsi for a while because I would get two free sodas every time I got a pizza.
Two 16-ounce sodas was fantastic with it.
And they had great wings.
Double dough barbecue chicken pizza.
The chicken bacon pizza was the tops.
Yep.
And I've been trying to recreate that feeling ever since.
I make that pizza. It's like my son's favorite meal now. Go ahead.
We're not getting that Batman question. No,
we're not. No, you can use that next week.
There was a place recently when I found that I ordered, they had a barbecue chicken pizza, and I said, can I get bacon on that? And they were like, oh. So,
because that's the key.
Yeah.
You counteract the sauce.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
God, I can't even imagine. The kids that are there now don't even know what they're missing.
I thought Mark was going to be 2 minutes in and out. And then we went on this weird nostalgia ride. There was the Steve Van Neel sauce hiding. There was.
Oh, man. You know, do you remember? I don't know if you were there or not. This is the last thing we'll talk about. Is that when I almost died from eating wings from Rogan's?
No.
You may not have been there. It was at your place. It was at your garden apartment.
I can see you in my mind choking on something.
Yes. So I you know, this is upstate New York. It was the home of chicken wings. That's where they were born, from Buffalo, New York.
I didn't like them while I was there.
So
I feel bad.
I remember grabbing a wing and a big old dollop of hot sauce on it and putting it in my mouth, and the sauce ran down my throat.
And I kind of remember this.
My body's biological reaction, it was to close the throat because it was hot.
Yes.
And so no air was coming in. It was like when you die in a fire. Mm-hmm. And so I remember flailing around your apartment, going to the sink, trying to drink water to open it up again. And after what felt to me like 10 minutes, but it was probably only 25 seconds, finally my throat opened up again. But it was like... Mm-hmm. It was like the most genuinely terrifying moment of my life up until that point was,
wow,
I'm going to die from a chicken wing, not even choking, on the bone, just from the sauce in this apartment. What would you guys have even done?
I don't know. I mean, I hadn't been watching ER at that point, so I wouldn't have known to slice into your airway. You wouldn't have
cut a hole in my throat and
shove a pen in there.
Big pen.
Like I would have. Yeah. That's what you do. I mean, I know what to do now. I wouldn't hesitate. I'd slice you up like a son of a bitch.
We were probably playing GoldenEye. Yep. All right. So that was fun. Contact@iFanboy.com. You can write it for this show. You can also write in for our Media Splode show. If you put that in the subject line, we'll know where to put it. And thanks for everybody who writes in. Sorry for the email we had slated for after Mark's, but we'll do that next time. Let's do some plugs. So, again, this is a time of lots of special edition shows. There's going to be a special edition show every week from now to the end of the year. Previously, we had our Media Splode show. We talked about House of the Dragon and the Lord of the Rings of Power, both season ones. We talked about that in our Media Splode show. Just behind this show, a little surprise for you. We had Josh and I reviewed She-Hulk Attorney at Law Season 1. That was in lieu of Talksplode this month. We decided, hey, let's talk about the show we both enjoyed and give people a preview of perhaps some TV coverage that they could unlock at Patreon as a stretch goal. And so that was fun. That's right behind this show. And then coming out this week, we're going to have our review of Black Panther Wakanda Forever. Josh and I have seen it. We haven't recorded the show yet. But we will, and we will be getting it to you as soon as we can, which will be Thursday, which is when the special edition shows come out. And so that means we're at the end of the year. We actually only have four more picks of the week left. We've got a month left of shows. We have 856, 857 in November, 858, 859 in December. And in between that, we'll have the Black Panther show. We'll have our Media Splode in November. We'll have a Super Sons review in December. We'll have our Book Splode. Oh, Book Splode. We've chosen the Book Splode book. We're giving you some time. Josh and I are going to review Namor Visionaries, John Byrne, Volume 1. It's the first 9 issues of John Byrne's early 90s run on Namor the Submariner. It's topical. It's fun. It's John Byrne. It's Namor. It's flat tops.
Where's the suit?
Tiny green panties. We're excited. So if you don't own that book somehow don't own it, the issues are all available on Marvel Unlimited. That's how we're reading it. So... Namor Visionaries, Volume 1, John Byrne. Or Namor Visionaries, John Byrne, Volume 1. That's the Book's Blood book, that show will be coming out in December. And then our All Media Year-End Roundup comes out December 18th. That's our final show of the year. And then we'll be back with Pick of the Week 860, January 8th. That's the holiday schedule.
Go to ifanboy.com. You can find all of our shows, our history of comic book writing from talented writers, some of whom may have eaten wings with us. You can like facebook.com/ifanboy or @ifanboy on Twitter for now. And iFanboy Comics on Instagram, and you can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out in any of those areas. You can follow Connor and I individually on Instagram at CSGO Patrick or Jay Flanagan. Our YouTube page is youtube.com/, you guessed it, iFanboy. All the old video shows are up there, and we post this show every week. That's it. That's where those things are.
And if you like the show, consider leaving us a star rating or a review. Wherever you listen to podcasts, star ratings and reviews are incredibly important for any show you listen to. And any show you listen to, would appreciate you do that. It takes us just a second to do, and it helps people find shows, and we do appreciate that. I did want to mention before we go, and this is something we've talked about a lot in the last couple of years, because we're at that age where people who have been very important to our comic book lives, in the lives of the show, it's or iFanboy itself, which is we're in our 22nd year, starting to pass on, and we've had a couple throughout the last couple of years, but the past 2 weeks we lost Kevin O'Neill, who for me rose to prominence with the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and then this week Carlos Pacheco, who we know had been really badly ill, had MLS and was going to retire from drawing, very unexpectedly passed away this week. And then Josh, you probably don't know this, but while we were recording, it was announced that Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman, died. So, oof. A lot of cultural touchstones for us. You know, we're at that age, and you know, people who wrote and drew your childhood and your young adulthood and your adulthood, the adventures that you enjoy, they're, you know, and cherish them while you have them, because you know you're never going to know when they're going to be gone. It's a bummer.
Somebody watch over Larry Hama. Protect that man.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people, too.
Kevin O'Neill is a surprise, but Pacheco was someone incredibly popular with a lot of people in the industry, and, you know, especially from a Marvel standpoint, drew a lot of the stuff from our time as an iFanboy. I mean, he did some great DC work. He did a really terrific graphic novel. But
he's also one of those ageless people to me. It's like, if you say his name, I don't really associate him with a particular era. I know, like, not so much recently, but, you know, it's just sort of always been there in comics for me. And it's like a name. There's some names that you see on comics. You go, oh, good. I know this is going to be all right.
Yep.
You know, because that's this skilled craftsman and artist on it. That's a bummer.
And I believe we did a Booksplode on Avengers Forever. He drew.
Yeah.
We did that fairly recently. Was that this year or last year? That was last year. But if you want to check it out, us talking about Pacheco's work pretty in depth, we did an Avengers Forever show last year. But it's a bummer. And unfortunately, yeah, it's going to be common as we go forward in our lives. But, you know, maybe pick up a book. Pick up League of Extraordinary Gentlemen if you never read it. Pick up Avengers Forever. What was the one he did? Was it Grant Morrison, the Justice League, JLA, JSA book?
That was really good. I don't remember, and if I try to guess, it'll be wrong.
And then Kevin Conroy, of course, is for most people, the iconic Batman. And so, you know, the best thing you can do is to honor them is to enjoy their work. And
my son and I have been watching the Justice League cartoons, and it says that they're Y7, but then Aquaman cut his own hand off to save his baby. And I was like, Jesus.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
I was like, wow. And he was like, argh! And I was like, this is grim. Holy cow.
But it JLA, JSA, Virtue and Vice was Carlos Pacheco's.
I remember that.
It was OGN.
Yeah.
That, was it Kurt Busiek?
I'm almost positive.
It was David Goyer and Jeff Johns.
Ah, right. Okay.
So we talked about Geoff Johns and JSA before. This is another great... Ooh, that's meant a good book split next year. But JLA, JSA, Virtue and Vice is a great Carlos Pacheco DC book. If you've only really known his Marvel stuff. Came out in 2002, right after we started doing iFanboy. So there you go. We'll send this show out dedicated to Kevin, Carlos, and Kevin. And until next time, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. Thanks so much, everyone. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.